Hello, hello, and welcome to Bus Pigeon. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we're going to be covering Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope.
Yay!
That was very aggressive.
I didn't mean for it to be aggressive. I am actually, I love this movie. I don't know how much I'm going to have to say about it.
I just began to say either.
Because it's like a no notes kind of movie. This is a good movie. Why are we even talking about it? Other than it's in the context of these movies that are less good. So we have our usual disclaimers, which include that there will be cursing, certainly. There will be spoilers. If you've never seen a Star Wars movie, this is definitely a great entree. Obviously, it was the entree for the world into this universe. And I can't say enough good things about A New Hope as a movie. It is, there are parts of it that are definitely dated, but the majority of it still holds. And I think that that's where we're going to end up with this. But in any case, then we're also having something to drink. What are we having to drink, Natalie?
Blue milk with vanilla. It's milk with blue food coloring and vanilla extract,
which means it's got a tiny bit of alcohol, but not really, not much, not really. Worth noting.
It's still delicious. It's like a milk with vanilla milkshake,
right? Without the extra sugar. So I feel kind of good about this. This is
makes you feel better about yourself.
It does. It does. It makes me feel like
we can do this whenever we want.
We could, and we don't. What is that all about?
I literally made a milkshake like a couple of weeks ago instead of doing this, even though this is kind of what I wanted.
Well, it has turned out well. We are pleased. And so you want to talk about pros and cons? And
well, let's do a synopsis.
Oh, yeah, that.
As we often do.
Oh, yes, that.
So, well, from the most part, we're following several different people. We first begin by following two droids, C-3PO and R2-D2. We met them in episodes 1 through 3. They are on a ship with a princess, Princess Leia, that is being attacked and boarded by the evil Darth Vader, who we know as Anakin Skywalker, but you're not supposed to know that yet.
Well, right. When this movie came out, we didn't know who Princess Leia was. We didn't know who Anakin was. We didn't know any of these things. And C-3PO and R2-D2 were brand new.
Everything was brand new, Mom. It was the first movie.
Yeah.
Not based on anything other than
Their relationship, their abilities, all of those things were created in this context.
Yeah, it's original. Yep. So they are attacked and boarded by the evil Darth Vader. She puts a message with some important information into R2, and she sends both C-3PO and R2-D2, mostly R2-D2, but C-3PO just tags along, and they go off in an escape pod and land on Tatooine. We know Tatooine, famous for sand people killing Anakin's mother. And
labor raid.
So,
I think Natalie's mentioning this for a reason that might come up in cons.
Slave trade?
No, continuity errors.
Oh, well, yes. So they had off.
They're continuity errors for their prequels, not for this movie.
Oh, no, it's not this movie's fault that the movies made later on are not, don't have continuity with them. That's not this movie's fault. So they land on Tatooine. Princess Leia gets captured, and they end up through a series that is a little too long for my liking to get to the farm that we know and love, ? We don't really know it from the other movies, and we barely see it in this movie, but it is the home of Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru and their nephew. Yes,
we met.
The last scene staring into the sunset with their adopted child now. Or adopted nephew.
Named.
They didn't adopt him, which is also bizarre. They still have him like, okay, you're our nephew. It's like, why are we giving that away?
There's a bunch of weird about that from a continuity standpoint. And it's continuity errors for the prequels, not for this movie, because this movie was a standalone when it was made. It was never to the public necessarily going to be a series, although there was an opening for that at the end. But it was not. Anyway, well, we're going to talk about the uncle and Aunt Beru and things.
We're doing it now.
Yep.
So we're introduced to Luke, who is our protagonist, our primary protagonist. We have one
Mark
role.
Hamill, the hottest he has ever been.
Oh,
It
that's kind of sad, but it's
is kind of
true.
sad. It's true, but he
He
looks
looks so
amazing.
good. He
Oh my
looks
God. I
so good.
had
Oh my
such
God.
a crush on him. I saw this movie when I was
I
10
think
years
every
old.
girl, straight girl, has
Yeah.
that. Well, actually, you know
There
what?
might be gay guys.
There are definitely gay guys who are into young Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
I think even lesbians can appreciate Mark Hamill's beauty. I think anyone can appreciate anyone's beauty,
Good looking guy.
and that
There you
is
go.
totally fine.
Yep.
But like massive boy crush, yes.
Massive.
Massive. And he's not alone.
Yeah.
We'll talk about him later. But so we meet him. He's a whiny little teenage boy who doesn't really appreciate what he has and wants to go off to Star Academy or Starfleet Academy, or not Starfleet Academy, the equivalent of that.
Yeah,
He wants to be a
right.
pilot. He wants to do a lot of things other than be a farmer. And his uncle's being like, no. It's like, why not? Literally, why not?
It's so part of this, like, I'm trying to imagine this. It's never clear in this movie that what they are farming is water.
I have no.
They
It
are
is water.
harvesting
No, yeah.
water.
They
Can
discuss
you imagine anything more boring?
that in the prequels, and I did
Right.
not realize
I
that until
didn't either.
just now.
It's like, what do you do? Does it sit there and hope for the best, or like,
I mean,
what?
there were pipes everywhere. I
Yeah,
think they
I mean,
were like
it does make some
drawing from
sense.
like the
The
very.
air,
But
right?
like,
They're trying
if
to
you run out of
condense
water, then
things.
like you've got to move, don't
Go
you?
to where the food is, as they
Yeah.
say.
Plant a cactus, like try to,
Oh
and then harvest
boy.
said cactus. That would be my mentality. Anyway, so he feels stuck, and they buy R2-D2 and C-3PO from some Jawas,
Jawas.
sorry. They are so similar to Ewoks in so many different
No, they're
ways.
so much cuter.
Ewoks are cuter.
No, I love the Jawas. They're a little scary. I like that. They're kind of impish.
Okay, I
Kind of
like Ewoks
like, well,
better.
yeah, Ewoks are kind of cuddly, whatever,
Yeah, they're
fine.
like
But
teddy bears.
Jawas are cool in their own
Their
way.
little robes, their glowy eyes. Anyway, and they also get massacred really soon.
Oh.
So they sell C-3PO and R2 to this family. Kind of family unit. And it is soon revealed to Luke that he's like messing around with R2's components,
Trying to clean him because they
and
are quite dirty.
yes. He comes across the message that Princess Leia has for someone named Obi-Wan Kenobi. So we know Obi-Wan Kenobi. Hello there. And but Luke does not. So even though this man is the one who dropped him off, he didn't seem
He
like he
knows
was a
him
part of
as
his life ever
he knows
again.
him as Ben Kenobi, right?
Well, he knows of old Ben living off in like the weird side of
Yeah,
town.
no, and
He doesn't know him like that.
we have got to mention the fact, well, we get introduced to actual old Ben shortly, so
At
proceed.
least Obi-Wan had the 2 cents to be like, or the forethought to be like, all right, I'm going to change my name, and like develop a weird reputation where everyone will leave me alone because I'm a cool space wizard.
Space wizard.
I do find it interesting, like obviously in the last movie, the third movie, he was being tempted with the idea of, oh, you'll get to work with Qui-Gon again in ghost form or whatever. But that doesn't necessarily mean you have to stay on Tatooine.
No, he's there to be a guardian for Luke.
Yeah, but what the fuck about Leia? Like, he's not
Well,
going to
because
look after Leia.
I think they figure Bail Organa's got that, but
But
clearly, if you
an
watch
uncle and an
Kenobi,
Aunt Beru don't.
if you no, definitely not. You say
Father's home planet. It's really
it's
stupid. So they should
totally
have him
bullshit.
looking at. I'm not questioning that. I'm
No,
just
so
questioning.
Kenobi, the series tries to bridge this gap.
It
It is
doesn't.
actually really kind of a fun series and well worth
It's
watching.
fun, but it doesn't really answer any questions because I think they were expecting a season two and didn't get to it. So
Well, I would love it if they did.
anyway,
But
Luke comes across the message. It's from Princess Leia, and she is begging for Obi-Wan's help because he worked with his her father in the Clone Wars. And
yeah, she got fully adopted.
Yeah, the fuck? I'm sorry.
It's a fact.
Either way, and she has stored vital information to the survival of the rebellion.
Rebellion.
The resistance is the next threat.
Well, right. And it's all stored in this R2 unit. You need to get it back to my dad on,
Alderaan.
Alderaan, thank you. I was like, Anduin, no. Sausage. I got Cajun food on the brain. Sorry.
Fair. So what she does, so what Luke does is like, I wonder if she meets old Ben. Weird. Completely ignores it. Then R2 runs off in the middle of the night, and Luke has to go after him with C-3PO, and they go, and they get attacked by sand people, but get saved by old Ben. And old Ben's like, oh, I knew your father. Casually.
It's like, he's so ancient. The amount of aging that happens to people on Tatooine is very disturbing. Like Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru have gone from being in their early 20s to being like 60.
maybe 50.
Yeah. Old Ben Kenobi is like, I don't know, 70, 80. He looks significantly old.
It's like 30 years have passed instead of like the correct 18 or something.
Yeah, exactly.
And 18's being generous.
Yeah. I mean, it's supposed to be like between 16 and 18.
Yeah. So, yes. You know what? It's kind of like Dumbledore aging from Jude Law to Richard Harris.
Yeah, it's like, oh my god, how old is he? 100 something? I think
150, give or take. And that's another thing. Like, do Jedi have extra long lifespans? I feel like they do.
I feel like they could.
They could, but they don't because they usually die in a war or something. Or Order 66 or some shit.
Yoda lives forever.
Yeah, but Yoda is a different species. So I don't know if that is attributed to his species or force sensitivity.
I got nothing.
But he doesn't age quite as much as poor Obi-Wan does. Watching these kids, that's been a full-time job for him for the past 18 years, apparently. So he's just like, yeah, I knew your father. He was my trainee, learner, Padawan is the term we use.
Yeah, he doesn't
but
use Padawan.
He doesn't use it. I was his master.
Doesn't use that term either.
I don't care.
Yeah, I know. Bottom line is like,
I taught him the way of the Jedi, mm-hmm. and then he got killed by Darth Vader, which is
a lie.
A version of some truth somewhere, I guess. He discusses that later. That comes up again. You might imagine because there's some splaining to do. And he chooses not to do it now. He chooses to do it where it won't crush the kid's spirit, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Even though the kid does not know who Darth Vader is at all, I don't believe. He is very far removed from the rebellion in many respects. He just kind of heard whispers. Because, again, if it's not happening on your planet, you're not going to hear about it.
Well, it's not like you're plugged into, like, any kind of network.
Even, especially on Tatooine. Tatooine is just completely remote.
Yeah.
Or we thought so, anyway. Mm-hmm. And except to see C-3PO and R2 ended up there.
Multiple times.
They're like, interesting. And Obi-Wan shows Luke his father's lightsaber. And he's like, cool. And so they're like, they wander around, they're talking, and then they see that the Jawas were attacked. And it was made to look like
Luke was going home. And they see the Jawas transport that they had all these droids in that is broken down, and there are a bunch of dead Jawas. And so it looks like they were attacked by sand people, but I love this phrase because it's so not the universe in which all of us know that stormtroopers, oh, those blast marks are too precise for sand people. That had to be
That will
stormtroopers. It's
be
like,
debunked immediately.
yes,
But
it will.
it gets the point across that there's danger, and so Luke freaks out and goes home to because that's where they would lead them because that was the last transaction they made as far as he knows. So he runs home in his speeder and he sees that the farm is on fire, the water's on fire, and
The buildings
Sorry,
and the equipment, and oh yes, there are dead
skeletons.
dozens of his.
They burnt real fast. And
The
I'm
entire,
maybe
I
there
mean,
was
their innards
accelerant
are gone.
involved. Maybe there was a bit like there should be more than skeletons left, but maybe they were roasting for a while, but it doesn't seem like it. It seems like the smoke is just like it
I
hasn't been
think
going that
okay.
long.
I think this was just, and I'm going to talk
I
about it
know
some
it's
point.
just like
It's the practical effects thing. They had a like medical skeleton. That's what they had available to use.
sure. And
Because you don't even really see clothes hanging off. It's like,
you see a little bit of jean jacket,
yeah, it's like,
but
okay.
Luke stares and then looks to the side very dramatically and then moves on immediately. And so he's just like, we've got to fight the Empire.
But
And
he also gives kind of a glare that is a little like Hayden Christensen. I
no, I love
really
that.
love
I
him.
love that
Like, he
moment.
clearly is getting hardened by this. I
The
miss
side of that jean jacket really
personality.
did it for
His personality, he's dear God, no. I'm sorry. What's wrong with you? I'm sorry. Holy shit. No,
it's
it's not.
it made me laugh, so go ahead.
No, he seems like he's a little bit wishy-washy, not a tough guy, but you can see him becoming more brittle. Like this
His
is the,
innocence has been taken away from him.
yes, yeah.
And
And
what's
we're just, what's wrong with you?
wrong with you? Hardened him? Anyway, so
His
they go.
personality. You've never heard
He
that
just.
before? Seriously?
Luke, I have, but it's still funny if you have a dirty mind. So Luke decides, I want to join the rebellion. And Obi-Wan's like, sure, let's go find a way out of this rust bucket of a planet. So they go to Mos Eisley, and I think.
They go to a bar, and it's the cutest little bar, the cantina, except that
Yeah.
it isn't. Yes.
It's not. It's shady as hell. And
And
that's where they meet Han Solo.
the
Now,
hottest guy in the entire Star Wars universe.
yeah.
Period.
Yeah, he is. He just is. I'm
He just
sorry.
is.
It's not even like the archetype, it's just Harrison Ford,
Yeah, I
I'm
mean, it really is just Harrison Ford. There's no one else that's Harrison Ford. It's just a thing.
It would have been so easy for them to have casted somebody who like made this arrogance annoying and
Yeah.
not as endearing as Harrison Ford does.
Yes.
But Harrison Ford has that little something, and I'll discuss it
Sense
in
of
a line
humor.
later
Yeah.
that it really endears me to him. But he's like, I'm a bounty hunter. I can smuggle you guys over
Oh,
to
he's not a bounty
Alderaan.
hunter. He's a smuggler. Bounty hunters are after him.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry.
He's a smuggler.
He's not a bounty hunter.
No.
He's the bounty being hunted. And
No.
so and what a bounty he is. So there, he's like, I can smuggle you guys all the way to Alderaan.
Natalie's having a rude day, just
I
saying.
am. I can smuggle you guys over to Alderaan for a hefty fee. And they're like, fine, whatever. These people are royal. They'll help us with the fee. So they go on to his ship,
The
which
Millennium
is,
Falcon.
yes.
Oh, I love this ship so much. It
And so
is so
does the
great.
Star Wars franchise.
Yes.
So they are on their way, and meanwhile, on the Death Star, Leia is being interrogated, and they're just like, all right, well, if you don't give us information about where your rebel base is, we're gonna blow up your home planet because that's the functionality of the Death Star. It can is a planet killer. And so she's just like, no, here's here's a random planet. And they're just like, all right, well, we're still going to blow up your home planet. And
it's too far to go to that other planet.
Yeah.
People won't see it, so we need to blow up Alderaan.
We need to make an example. And so then they're like, all right, well, you're going to be executed anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Why they don't do it immediately is for plot reasons, but you know.
Yeah, there are things about this, and I guess I'm going to talk about it in pros and cons maybe, but I love Carrie Fisher. I think they don't, but
it still doesn't make sense, like, logically.
Suddenly she becomes useful.
Well, to be fair, I guess they wanted to check if her info was right before sending her on her way to hell. And so, I don't think she'd go to hell, actually. I think she'd go to heaven. Galactic heaven, I guess. But either way.
I look at it this way, and you can find memes about this everywhere. It's like, you know, Princess Leia has had far more dark shit to deal with than any of those Skywalker boys, and she never was even tempted. So there you go.
That's certainly true.
So yeah,
we don't see a lot of it, but a lot of it's implied. Anyway,
whole planet blown up with her dad on it.
And it takes her like 10 seconds to get over it.
No, it doesn't.
We did not see her reckon with that.
People, honestly, this wallowing in your stuff, your emotions, was not a thing back in the day. This might be why Gen X is the way we are.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, your father and everyone you've ever known just blew up. All right. Well, that sucks. Anyway, moving on. And so, when the Millennium Falcon enters the space near Alderaan, it's just a meteor shower because Alderaan has been blown up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all that's left. And so they get sucked in via tractor beam, to the Death Star, which they found out is not a moon. It is a full-blown space station, which is freaky because they've never seen a space station of that size before. Yeah. And also, weren't they beginning construction on this at the end of the third movie?
I think so, yes.
It took them 18 years to do this.
To get it fully functional.
That's fine, but then they build another one, spoiler alert, and it takes way less time.
Because they know what they're doing, and, well, yeah, but that, it's... Okay. Well, we are going to talk about that whenever we get to the sequel.
It's just another continuity thing that I find funny.
Yeah.
They just wanted a cool visual for the end of the third movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they are sneaking around and trying to figure out how to get out of there when Luke finds out that Leia's on board. And so he's just like, oh, we've got to help her. And Han's like, why? And he's like, money. And it's like, okay. So they go and they bust her out of prison. Meanwhile,
we have not mentioned our other friend who is here, Chewbacca, who is fucking fantastic. Again, you know,
there's nothing to say about him. He's just great.
He's great. But he is such a personality. There's so many personalities in the things that would be considered the animals or inanimate or whatever, or, you know, robots. There's a lot more personification of them. And I think that makes a difference in this movie. And we'll talk about that in person once.
Yeah. So meanwhile, Obi-Wan has separated from the group to power down the reactor or whatever. And he runs into Darth Vader. And so they're like, ooh, we know each other. You're only a master of evil, Darth. Which is so funny if you consider the fact that he would never call him Darth. Because he only vaguely heard that from a hologram security thing 18 years ago. He knows this man is Anakin. And him saying Darth, it's like, okay.
Yeah, it's true. I guess maybe...
It's obviously to not, like, make things obvious for the twist later on, but it's still weird that that's how he...
What he calls him. Again, continuity issues, but there we go.
Yeah, but it's continuity issue regardless.
As it has been presented to us, Darth Vader killed Anakin, and it's almost like all we're going to call him is Darth, because he's such a bad...
You know what I would have preferred if he just didn't call him anything? If he didn't say a name at all. He just said his lines and didn't have to say whatever.
You.
Yeah, exactly.
You.
Whatever. So they fight. It's kind of lame, and just because of the limitations of the time, and even though they improved later on. And then he disappears. Obi-Wan disappears, and when I mean disappear, he fully disappears.
He sublimates. It's not a body. There's nothing, no physical presence for him.
It's essentially death.
Yeah, he kind of sublimates into a soul or into the Force or whatever.
I think it's into the Force is the vibe. And so Luke sees that and he's like, holy shit, what? More people I know dying, huh? And
yeah, talk about some shit. Poor Luke. Of course, and he was a front row witness to a lot of his trauma. So
yeah, so he's seen some dark shit too.
Yes.
So they get Leia out of there and they go to some random planet, I don't know which planet, where the rebel base actually is, and which they're being tracked and they know it, and obviously that gives away their location. But if they can find a weakness in the Death Star
using the plans in R2,
yeah, they can get rid of the Death Star before any harm befalls
other
the planet
other than Alderaan.
Right. So they find a weak spot, which is pretty damn obvious if you've ever looked at plans before.
Well, but it's also teeny. Like, it's the kind of thing that you could see possibly overlooking.
I think that Family Guy did a bit or something when they, like, did a parody version of this of, like, did you ever think of just, like, putting a few boards over that? So that you just, it's a 2-meter hole. Like, you could just cover it up. It really shouldn't be this hard. So they make a plan, and Luke's going to be a part of the squad that are going to attempt to shoot
Red later. Sorry, he's not red later.
To shoot a blast into the reactor, through the 2-meter hole into the reactor, which is a very hard shot. And meanwhile, Han is like, I'm not going to do this anymore. Once I got my money, I'm going to leave, which is disappointing. So they are having this fight and they're racing against the clock to, like, when they warm up enough to be able to hit the planet that the rebel base is on. So
she's talking about the Death Star warming up to kill the rebel base.
Yes.
We have a countdown that goes with that, and then obviously the people on the rebel base know it's coming, and they're really hoping that all of their fighters are able to make some difference. But the fighters are getting picked off by Darth Vader and other stormtrooper pilot people.
But Luke, without needing any kind of assistance,
yes,
he is able to trust his instincts with the help of Force Voice Alec Guinness, and he shoots directly into the hole and it blows up the Death Star, and with the help from Han, who came back to distract Vader and all of the other stormtroopers.
Well, yeah, he shoots at Vader's ship, and he gets Vader and the other guy who was with him go spinning off into space. And that's what I was referring to in our last episode where I talked about them spinning.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then everyone gets a medal but Chewie.
Alas, poor Chewie.
Poor Chewie.
Poor Chewie.
And that's New Hope.
It is. So what were your pros?
Music. Obviously, the music is iconic and amazing, and we love John Williams. Cast. All of the cast is fantastic in this. I don't think there is one miss at all. I think that each of them bring their own personality. I also like that even though they're playing, like, when you look at A New Hope, it is such a hero's journey, easily just like beat for beat a hero's journey. It's very basic when you look at it on a foundational level.
Right. What you've just described doesn't sound like tension or anything.
No,
like
it doesn't.
Exciting to watch.
And it being like 2 hours or so, or like a little bit over 2 hours, seems like it would be boring. But what they add to it with world building, along with the like personality that comes out of these characters, is just so addicting and magnetic that you're like, oh, I can follow these people through anything and I will enjoy it. And I think that's another one of the many reasons why the shows that have come after it rely so heavily upon these cameos and all of that stuff, or
and
just
callbacks,
yeah,
callbacks to the movie.
Because it's like, oh, well, I know that. That makes me feel happy, and it's kind of like what nostalgia bait is doing in a lot of other like reboots and such, but especially in the Star Wars TV's universe. Anyway, so Harrison Ford is incredible as Han Solo. Like I said, he makes it endearing, and there are so many funny moments, which is another best part of mine. There are many funny moments. Such as my personal favorite, when they break into the prison bay and they have shot all of the stormtroopers, and Han Solo goes onto the intercom with when someone is like, oh, distress signal. Oh, what's going on there? And he's just like, oh, no, we're fine. We're all fine here now. How are you? It's like, it's just funny.
And he shoots the comlink and he's like, we're gonna have company.
So we've got that going for Han. He's very snarky but endearing. He's very sarcastic but brave, but also kind of a coward, because like, again, that's shown later on with actions, not words, when he runs after the stormtroopers that he thinks he can handle and then gets overwhelmed with a whole bunch of stormtroopers and runs the other direction.
Well, I mean, he's not stupid.
No, he's not stupid. He's cautious. He's more cautious than you'd think.
Yeah.
And he's very reckless, but he's not willing to risk his own skin, you know? He's such a complex character.
He is, but he is not someone who's going to be overtly in it for any cause, but that doesn't mean he doesn't recognize something as being good or evil.
Sure, but he also, it doesn't really, at this point in the game, he doesn't think of anything as, all right, well, I'm doing this for the greater good, or like, I'm not going to save this girl unless there's money involved. What am I getting out of it? And that's what drives all of his actions in this movie, of like, what am I getting out of it? But that's consistent with his character, so makes sense.
He's also attracted to her eventually.
Yeah, but that's not right now. Not really.
Just a little.
A little bit, but it's Carrie Fisher. Speaking of Carrie Fisher, she brings a lot of brattiness, which could come off as annoying, but in her situation, it's like, well, yeah. If you're in the situation of, like, the Dark Lord being like, oh, we're going to blow up your planet. It's just like, yeah, okay, try me. Or, like, she's very, very loyal to the cause. And
she's very tough.
That's very admirable. She, although she's being treated like a damsel in distress, you can tell she's not. She just is in a really shit situation where she can't help herself.
They did torture her
they
with
did.
Like this probe that had needles and shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, and she didn't break. So you know,
she's very, very tough.
She's also teeny,
and she also is willing to grab a blaster and do what she needs to do. And so great,
she's a woman of action.
Mm-hmm.
I like that,
which is slightly different from Padme, but it's enough like her that it's like, ah, well, sure. Then we've got Luke. I really like Luke. Actually, I think that he is the perfect protagonist for what this story is, of like a little naive, has to grow up really fast in this story, but is willing to do whatever it takes to get the job done. And he becomes a lot like Leia, of like, I'm willing to do whatever for the cause, because he's seen firsthand what it takes. Both of them have seen firsthand what happens when you get these people's way and you don't win. So they are willing to put everything out on the line to protect everybody.
They're both good advocates for it, too. Like, they both, like, Luke is trying to persuade Han, and he's talking about, like, you know what's on the line here. You've seen what these people can do. You know, and he's trying to persuade people to the cause, not with, like, some vague, non-concrete examples. It's like, look, you know what this means.
Cause
and effect. You know how important it is to these people. We've got to, you know, we've got to help them. And Leia is like that too. She's, you know, when she's talking to Vader and she's talking to General Tarkin and she's talking to the other people, she's very much an advocate for the rebellion. She's not going to back down. She's not a diplomat, you know? And I think that's also a big change from the prequels too. You don't have all of this superficial kind of language. It's all very gritty, I think.
I like that too.
Me too.
And James Earl Jones, who is the voice of Darth Vader.
God, yes,
so good, so
love
perfect.
Him.
R.I.P.
Love
We
him.
love you.
Yes.
World building. I think that this movie, as a standalone, does a really good job at world building. We go to multiple different planets. Well, two, but you know, I think that if they went to more,
we heard
planets,
about others.
Well, here's the thing: the prequels would planet hop to the moon and back. Like they would go so many different places. Mm-hmm. And that would be a little bit disorienting if you didn't already know the world. Meanwhile, they know that this is your first little dip your toe in to the world. And I think that they chose the right way to do it. And they made it palatable. Most of it happens in space on space stations, which I'm sure was also easier for like doing it on sets and stuff like that. So it was practical, but it also like just added to, all right, the simplicity of this is what's happening. This is where we are. You don't need to learn an entirely new place. You can do that in later films. This is just setting the stage and doing our very simple hero's journey in space. Humor with balance. I like that this movie doesn't shy away from humor, but also is not trying to quip at you all the time. I think that the balance of like humor to serious moments, I think, is really good in this movie. And the balance can be a little shaken in later movies. Like, I feel like the sixth movie is a little too much humor, whereas the next movie, I think, still has a good balance, but is dipping more into the darker side of things. Which I actually really like.
More drama.
More drama. But I do like that in the next movie, though. I will talk about that when we get to it. But what I really like about this movie is that it has really funny Han, and everyone has a funny moment, honestly. And then we've got
C-3PO and R2-D2.
I'm going to talk about them later. You can do your piece once I get there. It's two items later. So I like that there's good humor with the droids and with Han. Luke has some fun moments. Leia has some fun moments. And Obi-Wan has unintentionally funny moments. And so, and then we've also got like the really dramatic parts with Luke and Leia of like Luke finding his adopted aunt and uncle dead in fire. And then we've got Leia seeing her adopted father and mother blow up and everything she's ever known blow up in her face, literally. So we got a lot of balance there. And I do like that they make this, and this is a big difference between the prequels and the original trilogy, and it's obviously like because time has passed and things were able to be built up, but I like that the Empire is a credible threat. Mm-hmm. And it's because of the Death Star, but it's also because of their presence. And meanwhile, like in the prequels, obviously they were building up the Empire or whatever. They could have been doing that for ages.
Yeah.
Instead, you know, he chooses to
trade Federation.
And then, but instead, what he chooses to do is instead of using both armies that he paid for to create one big army and taking over everything, he decides to pit them against each other to cause unrest. That's dumb to me. Anyway, and so he has to build it up from there. And clearly he left the droids away because of, you know, effects budget.
Yeah.
Real stakes. I love, again, the Owen and Beru dying and people dying in battle. Like, there are a lot of people that we see in the battle to kill the Death Star.
See actual kind of gory death in this in a way that you don't see in any of their previews.
Yeah, a lot of people
you
get
don't
shot.
See, like, they have to burn the bodies of the Jawas that are dead. Like, there is a lot of bad stuff. I agree.
Yeah, again, that's a good, great thing about the balance. Mm-hmm. I love how dirty and lived in it feels. It's nothing's ever squeaky clean. Even the Empire is a little bit smudgy, a little bit dirty, a little bit worn. And I do love that. And especially, like, the droids, they have wear and tear that's natural. It's not squeaky clean like it is, like, for example, in the third movie, they're in the middle of a war and R2 looks like fresh out of the box. You know? And so
he's fighting things and shooting fire and all this other stuff, and it's like, come on.
This R2 was down and dirty. And I like that. And obviously it's because time has passed, but it's also like, it's just interesting. I like the choice.
It's a practical effect thing too.
Because you're going to get general wear and tear on practical effects. And again, that's what I like about it. R2 and C-3PO. I think that they're a great duo. I like that they're our entryway, which it's kind of bizarre that they're our entry into this world. You'd think it would be a human, but no, they're the ones bridging the gap between the storylines. We've got Leia and Luke on very, Leia, Luke, and Han on very different paths. And Leia's bridge to Luke is the droids, and Luke's bridge to Han is Obi-Wan and the droids. And so you get, like, it all fits. And I think that in general, it could have not worked with the droids if they didn't have so much personality. And
so much actual dialogue. Yeah. And they don't do it as a, like a dump, like we've seen in so many movies. There isn't just, backstory dumping.
And they argue like a married couple, and it's very funny. And
very cute.
There's great humor there. And C-3PO, I like that C-3PO is not just a robot. He has opinions on things of like, yeah, no, I don't think that's a good idea. You're going to go die.
He's worried for R2. I mean, he mm-hmm. actually has emotion, which of course he's a droid. Probably shouldn't. But at the same time, it really works and is necessary for this movie to work.
Yeah. And I already kind of touched on this, but distinct characters with realistic flaws. Because Han's biggest flaw is his selfishness and his recklessness.
Ingrid.
So that's kind of tied into the selfishness.
Yeah.
And then we've got Leia, who's a bit of a brat. Like, she's not perfect. And she makes mistakes. She makes the wrong call sometimes. She makes the wrong call in even attempting to try to, like, yeah, obviously she makes the right call and not telling them which the correct planet, but at the same time she feels like she didn't, and she's not the best at negotiating. She's not the most diplomatic, and
she's a snap judgment kind of girl.
Yeah, she really is.
And often it works, but sometimes it just doesn't. But what I like about her is, like, she really judges Han right up front, and then she's like, "Oh, you must be better than I thought, Flyboy. Mm-hmm. You came in that."
Yeah. And then Luke, again, he still has that naivete of, like, he's willing to believe anything, and he's willing to just blindly go into whatever it takes. And I think that's why him and Han balance each other out so well, of, like, we've got the skeptic versus the believer. And it even happens when they're discussing the Force, and, like, he's doing a little bit of training with a blast shield over his eyes. And obviously Han's being like, well, that's a bunch of hocus pocus. And we've got Luke just being like, well, you just don't understand.
It's the Force.
It's just like, wow, okay, dude, you just learned this today. like you don't know either.
Well, but I think, yeah, there's that innocence there, but it's not.
But he's also a snap judgment guy too, and he doesn't initially believe that Han can do anything for them. And meanwhile, Obi-Wan's a little bit more wise, and is just like, well, let's give him what he wants, and we can just deal with it then. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, do we need to get off this planet? Yes, let's go. So there you go.
We'll worry about that later.
So those were my pros.
My pros, and of course this is not a list of every good thing in this movie. It's just, like, the stuff that jumped out at me on this watch. The music, of course. And even the incidental music in this is so brilliant. Like, there are just, like, a little piccolo sequence, like, in between scenes, like, going, into the desert. Like, it's a little bit scary. It's a little bit eerie. Well, no, I'm talking about even less than that. There'd be like a 3 or 4 note thing, and you get it's not that. That's Halloween, but still,
not heard the Empire March yet.
On
that's next movie.
No, we hear a little of Darth Vader's theme though.
A little bit.
But yeah, so it's fantastic. I think the music is amazing. I did notice that obviously the recording
equipment they use for both the prequels and the sequels is significantly better. So you get that brightness from the brass that we associate with John Williams. I mean, it's there in this.
You just can't really hear it that well.
You can, but there's just a little bit of fuzz on there that is not true in these more digital recording things that have come since then. And it, of course, you know, that does him incredible credit as well, but he's just a genius. The crawl at the beginning, and of course, you know, it's stupid to judge a movie by the crawl at the beginning, but this crawl is actually compelling compared to what we've seen for the prequels. It's like, hey, you know, there's bad stuff going on. Prince is trying to get plans to somebody.
No heroes on both sides. Bullshit.
Right, exactly. There's none of that. It sets the stage for there are stakes. People could die. And the very first thing you see is Leia's ship getting shot at. It's like, you know from the get-go that this is an action movie and that there's something on the line. I love that there's better dialogue and for C-3PO and R2-D2 and they are really our point of view. So you, as a 10-year-old going to see this movie, and of course, you know, like, I try to imagine myself as a 10-year-old going to see Phantom Menace. I don't think that you have the kind of emotional attachment to young Anakin that you have to C-3PO and R2-D2. Stuff happens, like R2 gets blown up more or less. And I was seriously worried that he would never be seen again. And you see him at the end, and it's like, ah, R2-D2 survived. You know, it's like, it's a real emotional thing because there's been this, you know, it's all C-3PO's side.
Much like Chewie and Han,
they have these little beeps and whatever as R2-D2's side, and he makes these noises.
He's so cute.
He's so cute, and you just love them. You are emotionally.
That was a really good impression.
Oh, thanks. I'm good at R2-D2. the practical effects, I put that with a question mark. I put that as a pro and as a con because as a pro, you know, there are the things that we've talked about, like the dirtiness, the messiness, the practicality of getting from one planet to another. There, a lot of that, those logistical things that the prequels take for granted or the sequels take for granted are, you know, things, and even like sequels within this original trilogy kind of take for granted that I got to find a way off this planet. I've got to figure out how to pay for it. I've got, you know, like, all of these things are a bit messy. And the messiness of death, oh my goodness, the practical effects with that make such a difference, I think, compared to like, oh, someone got blasted and that's it. You know, like,
not bloody, not gory, not...
Yeah.
Not that it needs to be like the boys or anything, but
it's all getting cut in half isn't bloody or gory. No, I mean, it's just not, it's too clean. And I think the practical effects matter. James Earl Jones, his voice is amazing. He could read me bedtime stories anytime. It's just like his voice is incredible. Mark Hamill, super fucking hot yet whiny. I do like that similarity, and you don't see it in most shots, but that similarity between him and Hayden Christensen with that scowl when they're being pulled by negative emotion, I think really is cool the way they did that casting, and I don't think I appreciated it really till this watch of this movie.
You want to hear something funny? Mm-hmm. I was scrolling social media today, mm-hmm. and I didn't pull it up for you, but because I didn't save it. But I was just like, I googled my dad. It was just this. Different pictures of things, the usual stuff that we would send each other of, like, I googled my symptoms and it turns out that I need to be swept away in a period ball or whatever. That kind of vibe. And I scrolled and it came to, I googled my symptoms and it turns out that I just need Anakin Sith Lord eyes. You know, when he's like really
glowing.
Yes.
The glowing Tom Jackson.
I was going to send that to you. I should
have. Oh, that's great. That's awesome. I love the Death Star being the weapon of choice here. The fact that it is a focused representation or symbol of the Empire. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's a very centrally focused kind of thing. I like that. I like that they discuss that the Senate's been dissolved, that now the emperor is just the emperor and he's distributed, so we don't have to have these fucking stupid political discussions anymore. Like he's just like each planetary system is going to have like
It's
a
Star Wars. It's simply just battle strategy,
yeah, it's much more streamlined. We don't have bureaucracy involved anymore. The cantina
That doesn't mean
scene.
there isn't intrigue either, but that's
No.
like more next movie.
No, the cantina scene I really like in this. I think it's kind of, again, as a kid, it was kind of cute, kind of fun, but like, oh, wait a minute. We've got Obi-Wan cutting off people's arms. We've got
It's his
Han
thing of the
Solo
movie.
shooting first. He shot first. I don't care what anyone says.
I really don't. That's the worst part. I'll talk about it later.
Whatever, but I don't consider it a worst part given Han's character.
No, it's not that. It's how much they change it from the original
Oh,
of it
yeah.
being like, oh, but maybe Greedo did. It's like, no,
No.
he didn't. And don't, I saw it
Don't
more
insult
this
our
time.
intelligence.
I also saw more this time that they digitally made his neck kind of go to the side so that
Yeah.
he had dodged Greedo's hit, even though Greedo in the original, I don't believe even shot.
Yeah.
I think it was just Han shooting him. And it's like that works just fine.
Yeah, preemptive strikes are sometimes necessary. Thank you, Han Solo. So Han shot first. Han freaking Solo. Oh my goodness. Harrison Ford, again, and I've seen him in a lot of movies, most of them. I just love him and I like him on Shrinking. He's the only good thing on that show. Or at least his character is the only good thing on that show. I just feel like he can sell you. He's a very lived-in character. He embodies what he's trying to portray in a very credible way.
Can I just say, I also really like that he's willing to interact with his environment so much. For example, when he is having that talk with Greedo, he like picks at the wall and he like whenever he has a surface that he can put his feet up, he does. And it's just like that is so
He's
his
so
character.
casual. Yeah, he's like,
He doesn't give a shit about property or anything like that. It's just like, yeah, whatever, we're all here.
like, but to give off that sense of I'm at home here. You're not going to stress me out. I'm not afraid, but I am going to shoot you first. That kind of thing. I think that kind of swashbuckling, pirate-y kind of thing that you get off of Harrison Ford, particularly in this role, is fantastic and so desperately needed, because you don't have any everyman in the prequels at all. There's nobody that you can really identify with, and it feels alien, because most of us aren't part of, like, we're not 14-year-olds that are queens. We're not,
Right.
there's or the chosen
We
one
would
or
be the
whatever
lesser ones
yeah,
who are like just
exactly.
going to bars and
Yeah, like, or just scraping together. And I think, that's part of what we see on Tatooine too, which I think is much better thought through because they have to do these practical effects. So the people who embody this desert planet are like farming for water, which we didn't know they were farming for water, but farming something in the desert that would be very hard to farm. And like they're scavengers. So the Jawas are scavengers, the sand people are scavengers. And we see that like every time they encounter one of our protagonists, like C-3PO or R2-D2, like the Jawas are kidnapping them because they're going to sell them. Or the sand people like start sorting through Luke's speeder, just trying to like find whatever they can find that they can use for themselves. And that makes sense. I mean, this is not a mechanical society. This is not a place that's got a lot of, industry.
I also like that it feels really like a war zone. Not
Yeah.
necessarily, even on like various planets. Obviously, like Tatooine has it bad, but like everybody acts accordingly. Like they are doing the scavenger thing and they have to hassle for a price on getting from point A to point B, and it's a lot more than they thought it would be. And smuggling is being hard right now. But
What?
also, we've got Leia, who, even though she lives a very privileged life, clearly has some scrappiness to her because when they get stuck in that garbage, she immediately is like, all right, let's do this. And it's
Yeah.
just like she's very creative when it comes to like getting out of scrapes. And
Do you think
because it has to
that
be.
Right. And you know, one other thing that you mentioned, and when you started talking about that, it struck me that there's a guy who is following
The
droids, the spy, who's selling out Han and everybody.
That's the shit I wanted in Attack of the Clones. And
yeah, that. That would have been great.
Wouldn't that have been amazing?
It would have been amazing. So like the sellouts, the people that are, you know, selling people to the occupation forces because they just want to survive, or they want money, or they, you know, need to curry favor in some way.
And that's something that even in the first movie, The Phantom Menace, I'm referring to, not the first movie, but in Phantom Menace, even though this is clearly a very sad society, when you look at none of the environment shows me that. Like, they is very sanitized. And, like, Anakin and his mother, even though they are slaves, they live in this, like, apartment on the side of a hill, and they have great views out into the
and
world.
And a kitchen.
And a kitchen. And it works, and it's perfect. It's not like slave quarters as you would think them. And right. Not that I want them to live in squalor. It just doesn't make me feel worse for them, you know?
Or concern like, for them as slaves in the way.
Like, yes, Anakin is young to have started to work. But it seems like that would have been his function anyway if he were to live on a farm. And
yeah, tinkering with stuff, making sure
that like, it just seems like a regular job that you just don't get paid for, but you do kind of through having an apartment. Like, I'm confused. Thinking back, it really doesn't make much sense, and it doesn't feel as scrappy. And I would think that in, like, the slave-ridden place that Tatooine is, or, like, the center of Tatooine is, the Mos Eisley section, like, there would be a lot more scavenging, a lot more, like, black market deals going on, and, like, it would be a lot more shady, like it is in this movie.
Yeah, and I again, you know, my next bullet point was realistic escape issues. Mm-hmm. Like, they have to shoot their way out of Mos Eisley. You know, you aren't shooting your way out of much of anything in these prequels.
And it wouldn't take much.
Yeah, it wouldn't take much because everything works perfectly for whatever reason.
Because the plot needed it to.
I guess. But they have the garbage chute thing. Like, you know, you get stuck somewhere and then you can't get in touch with C-3PO.
You also can't speak your way out of that either.
Right, and C-3PO can't get him on the comms. And you're actually, like, there is a credible threat. Like, you're going to get smushed to death, and there's an animal in here.
That's also an element of the prequels that I didn't really like, because we would have moments, especially in Phantom Menace, where, but honestly, anywhere in the prequels, where the two Jedi would be, like, pretty calm as a cucumber in any of these situations of just like, we've got it covered, it will be fine, and it for the most part is fine.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we've got these Darth people fighting for their lives, trying their best, even though they have a hidden Jedi too, technically hidden force users who could help them in that situation, even though they don't know it yet. If this were a prequel, they would have discovered some force ability and done it themselves with very little like fanfare or anything like that. Meanwhile, they have to really scrounge for any help they can get.
Yeah, I would say
that was a great point about like them struggling to escape and it being like
and they're actually
realistic.
Escape. Yeah. So better green screen. I honestly think that the going all digital in the prequels and possibly in the sequels, we haven't watched this in a while.
Guaranteed to be digital.
But seems to have harmed it in the sense that we now have HDTVs that are beyond whatever was created, whereas these practical effects
don't look dated. They
don't look dated because I can't see that edge where you see like the digital edge in the same way. So I was surprised, like, why in the hell is this better green screen? But it is. Real human emotions, I think, mm-hmm. is so important to this. I have another note past that I can't read, so I'm leaving that. The patchwork of fighters, like, you've got a bunch of different fighters from all over the place in this last battle. Like, all right, we're going to throw you into, like, gold leader and your people under you, and red leader, red five, whatever. And, you know, we're going to have all of them, you know, from all over the place. And you see a little of that in, like, Rogue One, which we didn't cover, but it is a very good movie.
But you don't really see it anywhere else. It's just like people in helmets. I mean, you just don't really get a sense that they're real or that there are stakes involved, and there is a little bit more of that here.
Yeah, and it's not like we get any real time with any of these
No.
people, except for like the one person who talks to Luke, who knows him from back in the day or whatever, one of
Yeah.
his friends who escaped and got to join the rebellion.
Yeah.
But we get a little bit more of that. We get like a lot more of a confidence boost for Luke to be like, all right, well, this is setting up the fact that he actually is a good pilot. We haven't seen it all movie, but trust, he is a good pilot.
Yeah. Well, and he's been able to shoot things from the Millennium
Yeah,
Falcon,
shoot
which
stuff,
is
yes. And we got to see that earlier, but
right. And shoot
pilot.
blasters and that kind of thing, which again, these are skills we would not know that he had. He's a farmer.
Yeah, he is
So
a farmer. And it's just like he was able to do womp rats. It's like,
yeah,
okay.
okay. All
But
right.
can he blow up a Death Star? Yes, he can.
Yes, he can.
Surprise.
Yay. The force is with him. So R2 surviving, love that. And again, I like this because it's this thing for kids, but it is a part of the plot. It actually, it's not like a thrown in Jar Jar bullshit thing. It is not like, it's not, it doesn't look grafted on. R2 is a central character through all of these movies. And
But he
he,
only really feels like it in these three.
yeah, that's true.
Same with C-3PO.
But they, that there are actual stakes for them as opposed to like Jar Jar. There are no stakes for him. We don't care. So yeah, and we also think he's terrible and are kind of okay with him disappearing.
Yeah.
What were your cons?
The fight scene with Obi-Wan and Vader, it's not bad. It's just
Not
dated.
good.
It's not the best. It is
Yeah.
old men poking each other with sticks, and it's
Yeah,
not. And
particularly, and God bless him, Alec Guinness.
I can't blame him. He's doing his best with what he's given. And like I don't know.
I have to
I feel
point
bad.
this out because I read something later about Liam Neeson could not understand the choreography that they wanted with the lightsabers because he'd learned like actual sword fighting for a movie he did called Rob Roy. And so, like, he was constantly like hitting things because he would be actually using slashing maneuvers. And they're like, "No, this is a lightsaber. It doesn't do those things."
Yeah, it's not as heavy on the hit as you'd
Yeah,
think.
yeah.
But yeah, they're just old men poking each other with sticks. And it serves its
Awkwardly.
purpose. It serves its purpose, but that's what prequel shows are for if you want to see a better fight between them. And
Yeah.
I think they knew that. And so they retconned the fact that they hadn't seen each other in 18 years. It's like, no, they saw each other in the
Yeah,
prequel show. And
exactly.
that's a great fight scene, and that was probably the only thing really worth seeing in that show, in my opinion.
Kenobi?
Yeah, I
Oh, I
think that was
like
the best
that.
thing that came out of it.
Yeah, I know. I do like the little Leia. I think she's very
I
cute.
think she's cute, but I don't think it was a story that really needed telling, but or at least not the way that they did it. I think they could have done better, but yeah, I think the fight is a little bit laughable, but it is what it is. It's just because we've been spoiled with all the other fights that come in the other movies, including like the next movie
Yeah.
that is just like, oh, well, it could be better.
Yes.
They needed to be consistent on how they pronounced Leia. When
Yeah.
you have, and let me just be clear, when you have something that is completely original and you are using a name that is, you don't, that nobody knows, and you say it differently per character, the audience is never going to know how to pronounce the name.
It's like if people didn't call Hermione Hermione all
Exactly. If
the
someone in Harry Potter, the movie, said Hermione at one point, no one would know what to call her. And it'd
Yeah.
be like, well, what if Dean Thomas is right when he said Hermione? It's like, no, sorry, Dean, I didn't mean to throw you under the bus, but like
That
if he
didn't
did that, it
happen.
didn't happen. But if it did, it's like, all right, well, then what's the deal? Like, what is her name? And it's just like, that could have easily taken another take, talked to the actor who's playing the guy who is in charge of strategy, and just be like, hey, it's not Leia, it's Leia. Just Leia.
Yeah.
It's okay, but just make sure that you're
You say
correct.
it that way, okay? Don't be British.
Another thing is inconsistent accents from Leia.
Oh god, that's so
she
bad.
Goes so British at one point that I'm just like,
it's embarrassing.
No. Mm-hmm. And maybe they were just trying something out and then just kept the take, but it's like, if you were going to make her American, which they do, because she is American, Carrie Fisher is, I believe.
Yes.
And yeah, that sounds right. And so she's American. If she was going to do a British accent for the entire time, fine. But she clearly didn't. So what? and maybe it's like a 4D chess thing of like she only uses it when she feels threatened or when she is faced with people who seem to think of her as lesser than. She has to prop herself up with a British accent. I don't know.
I've got adrenaline Britishness.
Well, I don't know. I feel like that is a possibility of like, all right, well, I feel very threatened here and I want to prop myself up and make myself feel important. And
it's my defense mechanism.
It's my defense mechanism, sure. I don't know. I feel like the moment that she's talking about is with Governor Targan, who is also British. And maybe she just was like bouncing off of that.
Be a mimic. Yeah, she might be not in a negative kind of way, but someone who like reflects who mirrors.
Yeah,
and maybe. I can see that because I do that some myself.
Yeah, we all do. But it's like if someone goes real Southern, I'll follow them down the rabbit hole.
Indeed.
Anyway, Obi-Wan simply lying, or George Lucas not having consistency. Yeah, you do know those droids, bro. First. Second, I understand why they wanted to look. Okay, I don't know for sure if they knew they were going to go the direction that they did with Vader's character. If they did, then him telling the lie about, oh yeah, he killed your father, it's like, yeah, in a certain sense. And we'll talk about that's Return of the Jedi, I think.
Okay,
it is true from a certain point of view. But it's when he goes back to Dagobah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I feel like obviously that if they didn't know they were going to get another movie, which again, this was a weird movie and a very like it's like a just seeing if it sticks with the public, yeah, and it did. Luckily, yeah.
People were like, I think, very skeptical going into this. It didn't make any money at all. But John Williams, again, I think. And I think they talk about it in the John Williams documentary. He's like, we might not make money, but here you go.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cool.
But yeah, I think that maybe they didn't know if they were going to do anything with Vader's character. Maybe in this version of events of what they were working with at the time of a standalone, that is what happened. And that's fine. But like, I also think that they, for one reason or another, they wanted to shoehorn C-3PO and R2 into the prequels, which they didn't have to do. We didn't need an explanation of their origin story and him being built by Anakin and all that stuff. We really didn't need that.
Well, and how dated is their tech by the time we get to the original trilogy?
Crazy. Then Han shooting first, being screwed with, I just don't feel like it needed to be. I think that they... For whatever reason, they were concerned with him being unlikable, but it's like, okay, but he's being threatened, A. B, this movie's already gritty enough to, like, accept that that's what's happening. Like, yeah, yes, he is a hero in this story, but he is an anti-hero. Like, kind of.
And the hero is
Luke. He's a selfish hero.
Yeah, the hero is Luke. Han is, he doesn't have to be a hero. He doesn't have to
the fit. Morally gray.
He doesn't fit a mold at all.
He doesn't have to, and he doesn't. But it just, like, they randomly wanted to fuck with it. And
I honestly think there's a lot of PC shit going on with these retrofittings, and I hate it. It's like, leave it the fuck alone.
Chewie not getting a medal is bullshit. Yes. And I also said doesn't give characters time to grieve. I think they easily could have remedied that by just having them look a little sadder for a little bit longer. I didn't need a whole scene about them crying about it. I don't need any of that. But like Leia not being like, for example, her laying on her in her cell alone,
She's not like wiping away any tears. She's not like just looking off into the middle distance, feeling one type of way or the other, grieving, processing anything. And again, she doesn't have to be crying, but just like have her process what is going on when she is alone. And same for Luke. Luke saw that their bodies, and he gets a little bit of a moment, but he doesn't. It doesn't click to him later on. Later, like.
He steals himself immediately. He turns that emotion off.
And that's great. I'm talking about like when he's thinking of his reasons for doing this. He doesn't bring up his dead aunt and uncle once. Of like, maybe even just in a throwaway line of like, I know what the Empire can do, and if they have the power to kill a whole planet worth of people, I don't want anyone to feel the way I feel. That's enough. Like, I don't need much, but I feel like they could have milked it a little bit. Maybe I'm watching too much Outlander, but I feel like generally they could have made them feel a little bit more realistic.
Yeah, I think I'm a little like Leia in that I go straight from you blew up my planet to I want to kill all of you. Yeah, like, and what she is doing is she is trying to figure out a way out of her situation immediately. She knows that she does not have time to indulge herself. And I think that's true with Luke too. Like, what we don't see is the aftermath. Like, oh, fine, great, awesome. We can actually like let our guards down a little bit. We don't get to see any of that. There are a couple of moments in some of the other movies we see a little bit of it, but this is paced in a way that the characters don't have time for self-indulgence. They have to move on to the next thing to get things done.
They give him more time to grieve Obi-Wan Kenobi than his own aunt and uncle. That's my issue.
Well, but okay, and maybe this is...
And we got to know Obi-Wan a little bit more, yes, but... He didn't raise him.
Right. But no, my thinking is, and I've seen this with guys I have known, like the things that you think they're going to have emotional reactions to, they don't necessarily. And, they will have a bigger emotional reaction to, in Luke's case, to like this mentor figure that was actually going to like take him to the world he wants to be part of, dying, than the people he felt was holding him back. And that makes sense to me. That doesn't bug me.
Well, he got where he wanted to go, so good for Luke.
Any other negatives?
That's all I wrote down.
Okay. My cons. Unclear timeline. Because we are doing this in the context of the prequels, this timeline makes no fucking sense and it creates a bunch of continuity problems. I'm not going to go through all of them now because I think we've talked about a bunch of them. But among them, C-3PO and R2-D2 not knowing Tatooine, C-3PO not knowing that evaporators where he worked on that farm.
Owen and Beru know C-3PO.
Yeah, they know C-3PO. They don't recognize him. This is insane. R2, I guess, is new, but like fucking Obi-Wan saying he's never owned a droid. Bullshit. It's like there's just a lot of things, lines in here that make zero sense in the context of the entirety of these movies. That slow lightsaber battle between Vader and Obi-Wan is just sad. And you can call it age or whatever. It's not really that. It's just that it's poorly choreographed and not well done. And that's one of those areas where the practical effects are just not great. And I think the lightsabers, particularly not having that technology to make it move faster or better or whatever, it's a little bit problematic in this movie. Darth and Leia have met before. Obi-Wan and Leia have met before.
Yeah, and, according to the show.
And there's like nothing about that in here. That Darth can't read Leia's mind. Like, you are the guy who reads people's mind. He can't read her mind.
I just added that in the next movie.
Right. But he can't read her mind, and he's been able to like search people's feelings and control whatever. You don't even see him trying. He uses an actual mind probe on her to get out where is the rebel base. Still has nothing in there like about, hey, you know, I've been living with Bail Organa and you know, all this stuff. I mean, like all of this backstory that is important in the context of the prequels going into this should develop when he's doing that, but it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Aging on Tatooine, we've talked about it. It's shit. Han definitely shot first. The idea that they're changing that. The extended scenes. So George Lucas, when they re-released these original trilogy, and that's what they are showing is the extended versions on Disney Plus. And George Lucas added extended scenes to quote unquote show the extra things that he would have liked to have been able to put in the movies from the get-go.
Like except CGI.
None of them like are helpful.
The so, Jabba scene.
I'm thinking about like there is an extended, you know, montage of stuff in Mos Eisley with
extra creatures. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I don't care. Another one of the extended scenes has Jabba, you know, having hands. When did he have hands? Talking to Han Solo before they get on the Millennium Falcon. Again, added nothing.
Also, there's this one moment where Han has to go behind him and he like awkwardly is like placed above in the back so that he's quote stepping over his tail.
Yeah.
It's so awkward. Like I watched it, it was so jarring. I was like, you seriously could not have wanted that as a finished product. Could not.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Because obviously you can't have them re-record it now. No. But and they had recorded something along those lines with they had that recorded, obviously, but it didn't work. It ruined the pacing a little bit. And
it still does.
It still does. And that's why you cut it in the first place. It didn't need to be there. This shouldn't be the director's cut.
I agree. Leia's British accent, stupid.
Dumb.
Like Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan is not a great mentor, particularly to Luke in these circumstances. I mean, what is the first thing that you do? Like, you teach him a couple of moves with the lightsaber. You say a couple things about reaching out with feelings. And then you sublimate into the Force? What in the fuck, dude?
He really does just give up.
He does. It's like, that's just poor.
And again, it would have been really interesting if they had a real fight. And yes. Vader was just so much more powerful now. And so
yeah, or Obi-Wan's like clearly able to fight him but is showing Luke something like you know,
but he wasn't he just showed him death again. He didn't need that.
Exactly. Already saw death, know about death. But yeah, the 70s tech, I'm referring now to like when they are powering up the Death Star. it's like bad Star Trek tech from the 60s. It's so bad. Chewie getting nothing. Fucking sucks. Chewie deserves better. Justice for Chewie. All right. We have what is considered to be, by many, the best Star Wars movie as our next movie.
Yep.
We shall see how we feel about it when we get to it. But our next movie is Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. Are you excited?
I am.
I'm excited too. I haven't seen it in a while.
It's so good.
It is a really good movie. I do remember it being a really good movie.
I love a movie where the good guys lose.
I'm not sure I feel the same way, but the thing that I'm saddest about going to this movie is, you know, as people will see on our Facebook page, I have a number of mugs that are Star Wars mugs, and the one that you can't ever get, I've looked and looked, is the one for Bespin, which is the Cloud City
planet. Oh, it's Lando. Pink.
It's so cool. Yeah, it was unavailable from day one, so it's very sad that
you
I don't have
collected all of those.
All the ones I could, but sadly, I do not have Bespin. Yeah. So we will not be showing that for this next one. I am truly sorry. Other than that, we're going to have a big time. Looking forward to it. Hope that you join us. And
cheers.